I think that's what we should do, is just start. So that's what we're going to do. We're just going to start. I will okay, I am going to do what I do. That's what my friend said to me. You go do what you do. I will do what I do. I made that commitment 20 years ago, and I'm making it to you right now as well. Thank you for being with me on it. I am going to ask for you to do communion while I round up you know who, and we just see what September launches off as. I did the counting. Okay, here we go. Ah, hello everyone. All right. So, kind of an emotional beginning to the meeting as Veronica reflects on the fact that this is the 20th anniversary month of our work together in this way. And it she was reflecting on what it was like. The very first public channeling session. She remembers it. And she was asking us, just as she was talking to you, she was also talking to us. Amazing that she could do that. And she was saying, what was that like for you? So we're going to tell you what that was like for us, shall we? It was 20 years ago this month. She seems to remember it being the 29th of September, or the 28th, something like that, late in the month. And for us, the way it went was that for several months, Veronica and a friend had been getting together, just the two of them, and they would write down questions during the week, and they'd get together on the weekend, and Veronica would literally sit down and say, I have no idea what I'm doing, and sit down. And at that time, she had to hold her hand up to channel. We don't know if all of you know this. For some reason, like the holding her hand up like it was an antenna or something was how she had to do the channeling. And it would get to the point where her arm would get so tired that they would put all these pillows around so she could sort of like flop her arm like this on the pillows. And at that time, she couldn't move while she was channeling. Eyes open, no way. She couldn't even move. And so she would have to have her friend like bring a water glass over with a straw so she could drink water during the channeling. And of course the channeling sessions, you know, a long one was a half an hour or something, right? They weren't very long. And then afterwards she would be completely incapacitated. At times her friend would have to practically carry her and throw her in the bed, because she couldn't really walk. So it's been quite a journey. And it took a minute to get to adjust to all of it. And then after a few months or whatever it was, we said, you know, you girls, this isn't just for you. You have to get a group together. And Veronica had previously attended channeling sessions that happened on Wednesdays. And so she thought, well, Wednesdays is channeling day, so let's just have it on a Wednesday. And so they got a group together, and it was actually a pretty sizable group considering it was a new thing. It might've been 16 people or something. It took up a whole big circle in somebody's living room that was designed for such a thing. Cause the woman also taught yoga classes. So she had her living room set up to make it very easy to turn into a big open space. All the furniture was really light and could slide away. And we had the very first channeling session. And for us, really, we didn't care so much what people asked or who showed up. Of course, we cared, but that wasn't our focus. Our focus was supporting Veronica, getting used to moving our energy, holding our energy, staying focused, what we would call now keeping personality out of it, right? When she's in a group of strangers having reactions that she can't predict. That was our main focus. We answered questions. People liked the answers and it was helpful to them and all those sorts of things. However, our focus was completely really on just building a foundation for what we've done over the last 20 years. We needed a foundation for what we've done over the last 20 years. So we focused very carefully on that. And it was hard for her, you know. It was incredibly hard for her. And even when people were happy with it, it was just a little bit like, but I don't know what's going on. Like, I didn't create it or control it or choose it or figure it out. How can I know it was good if I didn't do anything? Right. So it's a really interesting, what do you call that? Foreshadowing of the surrender of personality. Like, I didn't make blank happen. So how can I trust blank happening? I didn't make the words come out of my mouth. So how can I trust the words that came out of my mouth? I can't control whether or not people like it when I don't even know what just happened. So it was an incredible dive into a willingness to we don't even want to use the word trust. Because it wasn't an act of trust. It was submission, really. Because trust is like trusting something will turn out, right? And what she did was just say, I don't know anything. I don't know anything. I don't know anything at all. I can't tell you anything about anything. So I'm just going to plop down here in this moment and have no control over what happens next. And in the very beginning, she had a really hard time. This was not the first meetings. This wasn't even the first meetings. This was, say, in the first couple years. The only way she could actually do the channeling was if she pretended that she could see one of those billboards, like in Times Squares, where the words run across the screen like this. Someone would ask a question, and then she would visualize that, and then we would together have the words show up, and she would read them off until she didn't need that, and we would just start speaking like we're speaking to you now, where she has no idea what the next word's going to be. So we did that for a while. Oh, and the whole, you know, she used to have to hold her hand up like that. And what happened is one day it was really cold in the house. And she was sitting on her hands because her hands were freezing cold. And she just started channeling while sitting on her hands. And then she never had to hold her hand up again. So stuff like that. Stuff like that happened a lot. A lot of things like that along the way. And, you know, we've talked many times about sort of the summary of our journey together. Right. And so we don't really need to recap that. What we would say is that you've been a gift to Veronica, to us, to the universe. Right. You've been a gift. Your willingness and your attention and your consistency. And you fought through things that were very hard at times. It's been beautiful to witness and be part of. We're very grateful. And many times over the years, we've said, you know, we're at a new phase, a new milestone. We're starting over in a way, right? Not from the beginning, but starting over as you're new. You are new. So we're starting over in the new of you. We've done that many times over the years. When we stopped having to be in levels 1, 2, and 3, you were new. It was true. Back then, the idea that you could choose your reactions to your experiences. What? What do you mean, Elohim? You were new. When we got to level 6 and we said, okay, now we're going to go to level 7. You were new. You were new in the idea of leaving levels 1 through 6 behind. When we started really digging in on the surrender of personality, you know, in the very beginning, the idea of surrendering personality. What the hell are you talking about this time, Elohim? And why are you calling it personality? And, you know, all the things. All the things. You were new. You were new in that. And now, just recently, this revising the relationship to clock time, revising the relationship to clock time. And yes, clock time is extremely important. But on some levels, it's also just a placeholder. It's a placeholder for the fact of unconscious personality influence, right? The unconscious influence of personality. You have come so very, 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 very far. And you're new again. You're new again. As you look at something as pervasive and invasive as clock time and call it for what it is. When you can look at clock time and say, even though every person believes you to be benign and important, I see you for the truth of you. You know, Veronica sent out an email, maybe some of you got it, about the clock time teachings. And she sent it out to like 1,500 people, right? 3 people replied. Two of them are subscribers. One isn't. The one person who isn't a subscriber out of 1,500 that replied said something like, "Whoa, trippy. I'll try to understand." So that gives you the kind of overall temperature, right, of the response to this kind of a teaching. Where you are. If we had just hung out on the boundary between level 3 and level 4, we wouldn't get that kind of reaction. Could have done that for 20 years. That's not how Veronica's built. It's not how you're built, or you wouldn't be on this call. So instead of spending a whole bunch of time saying things like, "Oh, well, you know, this really isn't Earth school. This really is about your opportunity to respond to your experiences in new ways. You don't have to treat it as though it's a school where you're being pounded by lessons. It's just an opportunity for you to choose to respond in new ways." And saying that in 100,000 different formats for 20 years. We're saying the word soon is actually keeping you in a jail. And so we're going to free you from the jail that the word soon reflects. Really, it's hilarious when you say it like that, isn't it? And yet it's true. That is truth. So let's carry on with that, shall we? Does anyone want to say anything? If you want to say something, now would be the time. And then we will carry on with what we brought to the table, as they say. Nancy W. says, my heart has welled up with all sorts of responses. We'll leave it at immense gratitude and love. Yeah, it's interesting how it doesn't have to be put into words, right? It doesn't need language. It's a visceral response to the truth. That's it. The visceral response to truth. All right, so if anybody else types, we'll read them after we carry on. We mentioned that defining the word presence is something that we purposely have not really done. It was always kept sort of vague, be present, be present. The other day, one of Veronica's local friends said to her, well, I just need to be present moment. And she was like, wow, that's really interesting how, you know, I say something like that kind of often myself. And out of all the definitions that we have done over 20 years now, we never really defined being present. It's not something that I have like this definition I can whip out like everything else. And in the act of being present or being in presence, one easy definition of it is don't be in the past and don't be in the future. It's what's left, right? It's what's left when you're not in the past and you're not in the future. Okay. The ability to abide in a space that is not present and not future borders on impossible. And yet that's what we're going to do. We're going to learn to abide in a place that's not present and is not future. So let's talk about that. It's not past and it's not future. We said that wrong. So what Veronica found in her exploration over this, over the past few days especially, is that many times she's reflecting on the past as though the past is a ways ago, right? Something that happened in her childhood or something that happened earlier in her life, right? And then she'll reflect upon something in the future and it'll be like, I wonder how this is going to turn out, or I wonder where this is headed, or I wonder how this is going to go. And that kind of feels a little far into the future. So if we have like a spectrum where here's present and here's past and here's future, she's kind of way, we're trying to stay in the camera, but not, it's like, how do you express far apart when you can only use this much of the camera? You know, pretty far apart. And when she would sit down thinking about the past, and when she would sit down thinking about the future, a new past and a new future would pop up to be contemplated, but they would be closer to this present moment. So it might be something like, something that happened yesterday instead of something that happened in her childhood. Or something she hopes happens next week rather than wondering how something is going to turn out long term. And it would kind of get closer and closer and closer. So she would intentionally surrender the experience of the past. And of course, that sends you right to the future. And she would intentionally surrender the attention to the future. And then it would just bounce back and forth until it got closer and closer and closer and closer to what she's actually experiencing with her physical body at this time. So that was an interesting observation. But what we also realized is that she would have brief glimmers where there was no thought of past and no thought of future, what the present actually felt like when it wasn't colored by any thoughts of the past and any thoughts of the future. Because many times you'll say get present, and it is more like doing something like getting present and then from presence then starting to think about something else again. It's not abiding in a non-thinking, non-focus on past and future state. It's sort of saying, oh my God, I was thinking about the past. I need to get present and get present. Be like, what should I be doing now? Right? It's not, oh my God, I was thinking about the past and get present and have no thoughts about the past or the future. And she would notice with her friend that's constantly saying, I just need to get present moment, that it would be just a flicker. It was better than not getting present moment, but it still was simply a flicker of the experience. Not an abiding. So Veronica's really been paying attention to this. And one of the things that she realized is that when she focused very carefully on the habit of saying, I need to be present, and having that just be a starting over again to think about the past or the future time, rather than an actual abiding in presence, when she realized that was going on and caught that, she was able to find herself abiding in presence for sequential moments. And when she did, it felt like she was falling. She had a sensation of falling. And it felt very fractal, like she was falling through the fractal layers, like when you watch those videos on YouTube. She was falling through the fractal layers. And there wasn't movement in a linear fashion. There was a movement in a descending, dropping, falling kind of a sensation. So instead of it being like step one, step two, step three, step four, it was just a literal sensation of falling. And it was very disorienting. And so we're just going to say right now, this new phase that we're in, this new journey that we're on, this new way we're engaged with you will feel disorienting, we'll feel vastly changed, we'll feel uncertain, we'll feel confusing, we'll feel little like, I'm off balance. We anticipate completely getting feedback from you along those lines. So if you feel any of those things, that's normal. The weirdest time this happened, it's funny that we use the word time there. The weirdest experience of this was when she was driving. She was driving and she decided to practice this. Oh my goodness. And so she was able to set the past and the future authentically away, not just bounce out of them, but authentically set them down. But because she was moving in a car, she had a very visceral perception of the moment changing. So she's like, okay, I'm not in the past, I'm not in the future, yet this moment is actually evolving, and I have a falling sensation, and I'm driving the car. So she did that a couple, three times, and then decided probably was a bad choice of when to really focus on this, because you're driving. Driving is not always the best place to play out the brand new metaphysical concepts that leave you feeling like you're falling. And as she has felt into this as she has felt into this more and more and more and more and more, and really recognized how frequently the idea of getting present has just been resetting which past or future you think about, rather than actually experiencing a different state completely. It's been quite revelatory. It's also, and this is part of the reason she was emotional when the call started, is it's also brought the effect of the past, specifically the past, into sharp relief in her, where she recognizes how the past has affected her and where it generated lingering struggle and lingering issues. Because it's a different perspective on every now is now. Wait, we're going to say that a different way. It's a different perspective on the past because it's beginning to come from the every now is now space. So just like we say to you that you can start experiencing alternate expressions as every now is now, where it doesn't matter where they would fall in the calendar, your encounter with them now means its presence. Her encounters with moments that have occurred to her in the past are being encountered as a presence experience, not as a remembering through the filter of who she was when she was 12, rather experiencing those things as who she is now. Just like if she experiences the samurai lifetime, she's experiencing the samurai lifetime as she is now. Just as if you experience a galaxy from the James Webb Telescope, you're experiencing it as you are now. You're taking this now self, the current version of you, right? And letting it interact with, experience, explore things that have occurred at different moments according to the calendar. So if things come up that you experienced in your technical past, and you start to experience a relationship to them that is different than what you previously did, this could be part of the dynamic that's involved. The current version of you, the version of you that's hearing our words right now, is experiencing and exploring, witnessing and chronicling. Just like an archaeologist, right? The archaeologist digs in the dirt and pulls up stuff from 100,000 years ago and has a present moment experience with something that technically is from 100,000 years ago. You don't automatically teleport back into some lifetime where that was a water jug that you used to drink water out of in order to experience it. We're not saying that's impossible, but using this example that we're using now, the present moment of you, the present version of you, the current version of you, the current version of you experiences something from a different calendar day, but you experience it as the current version of you. The great thing about this is that you get to take all of your skills and tools and education and knowingness and consciousness into, quote, the past by being present with something that's from a different calendar era. It's time travel. It really is. You always thought time travel was going to look like it does in the movies. But as it turns out, what time travel looks like is what we just described. It looks like you having the current version of you encounter things that land other places on your calendar. And the opportunity to do this is just in its infancy, of exploration. Just in its infancy. We just started talking about it a couple weeks ago, right? So we're just in its infancy of exploration. You're taking the current version of you into the exploration of other parts of your calendar. Your personal history, your alternate expression history, the history of your planet, the history of your solar system, the history of your universe. That's the journey you're on. And as you proceed on this journey, as you venture into, you're going to discover many, many, many beautiful and wonderful, challenging and intense things. And the only way this actually will work is if personality is not involved. Hence why we spent years working on that. Because your ability to face these different circumstances and maintain the current version of you stance will be extremely important. And of course, the current version of you stance is only accessible if personality is not in charge. So practicing this looks like a recognition when you're not in the moment, when you're not in presence. Fred said, say in presence. We'll try to remember to say it Fred's way. When you're not, notice when you're not in presence. And own up to the fact that you're getting something out of not being in presence. A classic one is you have a conversation with someone, it doesn't go as well as you wished, and then maybe you spend some time thinking of all the things you wish you had said, right? So what are you getting out of not being in presence? Well, you're getting a sense of like, oh, I should have said this, or that would have been really good, or that would have gotten my point across, or that would have told them, or whatever. So acknowledging, I'm getting something out of not being in presence right now. Part of what you get out of not being in presence is you get personality to have a comfortable place to express itself, right? Because if you're in presence, personality has no place there. And if personality has no place there, it squawks and it tries to distract you out of presence so that it has its own place back. It wants its place. And it has lots and lots of footholds in you. Unless you're in presence. And when you're in presence, it doesn't have much footholds, but it tries to distract you out of it. So one of the things you're getting is, I don't have to fight with personality as much if I just give in and let personality be in charge. I don't have to set boundary after boundary after boundary after boundary. I don't have to catch and surrender and catch and surrender and catch and surrender. All I have to do is just let personality have its way and think, which I've been doing for countless lifetimes. So you know, even though it's suffering, it feels familiar, and I'll just go with that because it's easier right now. So what are you getting out of being out of presence? You're getting a quieter, not quieter personality. You're getting a less challenging relationship to personality. Not to say it's good, because it's not, but it's less challenging. Well, if I'm not present moment, if I'm not in presence, I don't have to set boundaries with personality, and I need a break from setting boundaries with personality. So I'll just let personality be in charge for a little while and I'll be in the past. Okay. You did that. So catch yourself when you're not in presence and recognize what you're getting out of it. Now, when we say it that way, we hope some of you, at least most of you, if not all of you, say, that's not a really good trade-off. Yeah, sometimes it's exhausting setting boundaries with personality, but I don't want to continue to have personality have an influence in my life. And if I do it this way, then personality just gets to keep being an influence in my life. Yeah, that's the truth. It's a muscle you have to build up, right? Steady and consistently. So, first things first, catch yourself not being in presence. Recognize what personality, or recognize what you're getting out of not being in presence. And then evaluate the trade-off you're making. So let's say you decide that trade-off is not a good idea, and you decide that you're going to, instead of doing that, you're going to actually authentically be in presence. And so that means you're actually authentically going to not think about the past and not think about the future. And you're going to see what it's like to actually be present. And then, whoa, being actually present is a really, really trippy place. Why is it trippy? It's trippy because it's the field of infinite possibilities. Now, the field of infinite possibilities as a concept is something we have discussed for a long time. But as a visceral experience, not so much, right? We haven't had a real concrete, visceral, this is what the field of infinite possibilities is all about, this is what it feels like, this is what it's like. Instead, you've had this notion of the field of infinite possibilities like giant Costco where everything's free. Instead of the realization that the field of infinite possibilities is a field, not a store, it's a field. It's literally the fabric of reality. When it's undistorted by personality, the field of infinite possibilities is the fabric of reality that's being woven through tidy timings and choiceless choice and other things that we haven't even gotten to yet. And your exploration of that fabric, that tapestry of reality, has been confined to such a small little corner because of personality's domineering ways, that when you have the opportunity to actually feel with your nervous system, feel into what the fabric of reality actually is when it's not distorted by personality, you begin to have sensations you've never had before. You begin to have experiences you've never had before. You begin to have revelations. And you get to see how the world really is put together. How it's built from the ground up. And the way that you have interacted with the fabric of reality up until this point has been nothing but limitation. And so when you start to have a toe in the water of non-limited interaction, of course, Veronica experiences this feeling like she's falling. Reasonable. Falling into unlimitedness. Falling into expansiveness. Falling into an unrestricted state. Feeling a sense of no boundaries or no walls or no, tightness. And it's disorienting because it's disorienting, right? It's disorienting because, whoa, wait a minute. What is going on here, really? What is actually happening right now? Yeah. There's a disorientation associated with this because it is vastly changed. You know what it's really like? And of course, we've talked about this before, but let's talk about it again. Imagine you're a caterpillar inching along a branch, and then a whole huge thing happens to you, and you're like, oh my God, Now I fly. And when I do walk, I walk in a completely different way. So the caterpillar butterfly thing is always really good because transformation, metamorphosis, all that. But the truth of the matter is, that is what we're talking about. That's why we said vastly changed state, right? It's not a small transformation. It is not a small difference. It's not tiny. It's vast, like the universe is vast. Vastly changed state, where your experience of it is completely different than it was before. It's not similar. It's vastly changed. Just like when you go from seeing the world as a victim and then you stop seeing the world as a victim, right? That was pretty damn big. That pales in comparison to the change we're talking about now. That's a bit like I was a little caterpillar and then I was a big caterpillar. Okay, that's a big change. But it's not transformational in the way that this step is transformational. The idea that you are so separated from the temptation to be in the past or the future, and that you plummet into presence and abide there. Now, here's an example that maybe it'll work for all of you. We don't know. We'll give it a shot. At some point along the journey, this was many, 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 many years ago, there was some exercise we gave or Veronica came up with. We don't even remember. And what she was going to do was she was going to visualize the bones in her body. Maybe this was an act of getting present. We don't know. But the whole point was visualize the bones in your body. And so she would start with her feet and she would visualize her toes. And she wrote about this on the website. Maybe she'll look it up if she remembers and put it on Discord for you guys to read. But we remember very distinctly that she would think about, you know, the bones in her toes and the bones in her feet. And she would get like just past her ankle and she would start worrying she has bone cancer. And she'd be like, what the hell? So she'd start over again at her big toe. And she'd start imagining and imagining and imagining. And before she could get to her knee, she'd be distracted by something else. Some worry, some concern, some thought, some whatever. And just with a lot of diligence over the years, she's gotten to the point now where she can start at her feet, go through all the bones in her body, all the way back to her feet. She can do that as many times as she wants, and she has no other thoughts except doing that. It's really easy for her. Sometimes she does it as a way to relax before she falls asleep. She just imagines the bones in her body as she's laying in bed. She's been doing this for years. So that's our template for the idea that you can feel overwhelmed by the notion of being actually in presence and how different presence feels. Excuse us, and how easy it is to get distracted out of presence. But you just practice. You know how many times she had to practice doing the bones in her body before she could do what she can do now? A lot. But now it's a really nice tool to have. And this will be similar in the sense that as you focus in on the idea that you can catch when you're not present, acknowledge what you were getting out of not being present, and then choose which you want to do. Do you want to continue getting that reward, or are you going to work the muscle of setting down the thoughts about the past and the future? And then do it again and again and again and again. And when you do manage to set down the thoughts about the past and the future, and you are in presence, and it does feel disorienting and confusing, are you going to use that to justify slipping out of it? Or are you going to continue to engage with presence? Are you going to ride that ride? That ride of, I don't know what's going on. that ride of I can't predict how this is going to go. I don't know how this will turn out. I don't know if it's right or wrong, if I'm doing it right or wrong. Are you just going to say this is more important than my habit of having to control, my habit of having to be in charge, my habit of having to know, my habit? Because the caterpillar doesn't become the butterfly without some contortion. And just like every time we have been at a milestone, like we listed out earlier, the milestone between levels 3 and level 4, the milestone between level 6 and level 7, the milestone that we're at right now, you had to put in some diligence. You had to put in diligence. You really had to be diligent, tenacious in your attention to the resurgence of habit and correcting the interaction with that habit. What did they say in the most recent meeting? We're not even sure who said it because they all said it in a different way. We think we all brought this up is your number one thing right now, your only thing really, is to remove personality from every experience to the best of your ability consistently. Well, as we have been in emphasizing over the past few weeks, the way that personality is showing up that we're focused in on right now is it's showing up in your relationship to clock time. And that's why using clock time as a way to bounce off of the temptation to be in the past or the future has been so powerful. We need to take it further now. Not just, oh, I looked at the clock. Oh, I didn't need to look at the clock. Oh, I looked at the clock. I didn't need to look at the clock. But I thought about the clock, or I thought about the past, or I thought about the future. I didn't need to do any of that. Also, if every now is now, then every now is in presence. So why would you think about the past or the future when through authentic presence, you'll have a revised relationship to every past and every future anyway? It's the healthy way to interact with the reality of those things. Because it's not that we're denying your past occurred or that your future is inbound. We're telling you that you've always interacted with those things through the filter of personality, thus having a distorted experience of them. So the invitation at this time is to stop having a distorted experience of them by taking personality out of the equation, removing it from the relationship, so that your authentic experience of the past and the future and every other now can be had profoundly and in a healthy way. Okay, so your turn to type. Okay, let's get back to the messages. We have a couple stacked up here. Anya says, just thank you and love you. Thank you very much, or you're welcome. Love you right back. Ever says, interestingly, last night in bed before sleep, I fell into how the past felt and how the present felt, and if I could feel the time passing. I couldn't feel the difference. It was all now. I felt embedded in it. That's a great way to say it, embedded in it. Nancy says, regarding practicing presence, I thought my brother was in the journey of leaving his body, transitioning. I leaned into using the web limbs example and allowed all the experiences of this lifetime, past lifetimes, even the reality that we are galactic citizens, be what showed up as I sat in silence and presence. Acknowledging what showed up, surrendering over and over. Surprisingly, he called and in that moment is stabilizing. The experience was completely different than ever before between us. Offering these tools and leaning into presence was what I was offering. Beautiful. Every now is legitimately now, and personality will not be able to help you with that reality. Personality cannot help you with that reality. So we can say every now is now till the cows come home. For it to be a visceral, tangible experience, you individually must put personality in its place. Who else? Janair, it is easy for me to go to the future to be healed. Hard to imagine the healed state in this moment. How would this work in the presence? The present. Well, here's the tricky bit about it, is we can't tell you how it works because we'd be talking to your personality. What we can tell you is that as you surrender more and more of personality, the reality that every now is now will become your visceral experience. And then you don't have to ask how it works because it'll be a duh. And we hope that doesn't come across like we're dodging your question, because we certainly aren't. What we're telling you or explaining to you is that if personality knew how to figure this out, it would have already figured it out. It's incapable of knowing how to do this. It's like asking an infant to do quantum physics. It can't be done. Right? The fact that quantum physics is a reality is true, even if infants can do nothing with it. The fact that every now is true, even if personality can do nothing with it. Personality says you have to be healed. That's the only right answer. The reality is presence is the only right answer. And we don't mean presence in the kind of old way that we've talked about it, which is sort of like, you know, what is true now, or just stop focusing on the past or the future so much. It's legitimately experiencing this breath without the influence of the past or the future in it, as personality presents the past and the future to you. So we're taking something that we've spoken about in general terms for a long, 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 long time, and we're dialing it in to how it shows up within the context of the surrender of personality and the recognition of the influence of clock time. That's really what this meeting is about. This meeting is about starting to have an incredibly clear definition and inviting in a visceral experience of what presence truly has always been, but we have not yet been in the now where this was the emphasis until right now. Presence isn't just paying attention to your surroundings. Presence is the absence of personality's influence. So you can be in the present moment, like Veronica's friend likes to say, I need to be present moment, by saying, I'm going to, you know, meditate or get quiet or chant or, you know, take a walk in the forest or, you know, whatever has helped. And you can be walking in the forest and personality can be walking right next to you. And that was a great interim step, right? To be present moment by walking in the forest rather than whatever else you could be doing. Can you walk in the forest without the influence of personality? And if you answer that question with the word yes, you need to check yourself. Because a more honest answer would be something like, I want to, or I choose to, or I wish to, or I'm working toward that, or I'm on that path, or something like that. Because if you were authentically able to go walk in the forest without personality's influence, think of the different ways that means personality is no longer influencing you. It's no longer influencing your feelings about your body. It's no longer influencing the way you feel about nature. It's no longer influencing the way you feel about air. It's no longer influencing the way you feel about time. It's no longer influencing the way you feel about other people. It's no longer influencing the way you feel about whatever else. And yet, that's the journey we're on, is getting to the point where every presence, every breath, has no personality influence to speak of. And any breath you want to take right now, we'll take a breath. Right? Took a breath. Right now, what do we have? We have the fact that Veronica is sitting here. The lights are in her eyes, as always. We're talking with all of you. She had an emotional morning, so she's still feeling that, like her eyes are a little itchy from crying. Right? Her eyes are a little itchy because the glasses situation is so complicated right now. She's a little bit hungry. All these things, right? We could list 100 things so easily. And in each of those things, personality still has a voice. So the influence of personality is pervasive, and it can be exited as a group. It doesn't have to be exited by each and every one. That's what we've also been working on, right? You can distance yourself from its effects. And one of the easiest ways to distance itself from its effects is to notice, like we said earlier, notice when you are experiencing the past or the future. Own what you're going to get out of doing that. And then make your choice. It's really important to own what you get out of it. Because that's how you elevate personality out of the unconscious layers. You say, "Ah, that's the little psychological payoff I've been getting." Well, that psychological payoff is not sufficient. That psychological payoff is not sufficient for me. But if you don't own what you're getting out of letting personality be in charge, it's really easy for personality to continue to hide. So it's just a way, it's a way to empower yourself in the discharge of personality's influences. Another thing you could do is go walk in the forest and just notice how many places personality is influencing you. Personality is evaluating this and evaluating that and evaluating this and evaluating that and evaluating this. Can I look at this branch on this tree without having personality evaluate it? This is a good exercise to do. Can I think about this friend? Can I watch this show? Can I read this book? Can I have this food without personality telling me what it is or what it's about? Am I capable of doing that? Well, maybe not right away, but you weren't capable of thinking of all the bones in your body without getting distracted either, Veronica. And you have the choose and choose again muscle to use. So the journey, really, at this point, is to prioritize this. Okay, what about some other comments, thoughts, ideas, questions? We've been talking most of the time, so it's really your turn, unless you have nothing to say, and then you can say, I have nothing to say. You're totally allowed to do that, too. I don't have anything to say today. Leanne asks, could you please give another example of owning up to the benefit that P offers in thinking about the past or the future? Sure. You know, let's say you're thinking about a conversation you had with somebody. Let's do it this way. Let's say you have a job interview. Pretty much everybody's done that. You have a job interview, right? And you're waiting to hear about the job. Are they going to offer it to me or not? And you're rerunning the job interview conversation through your head and saying, well, did it seem like he liked that answer? Was that a good thing to say? Was that the right way to answer that question? Did I wear the right clothes? Did I smile in the right way? Right? You're doing all that. What is personality getting out of that? It's getting a sense of reassuring yourself, filling the time when you don't have clarity. You don't have clarity whether I got the job or not. And so you're reassuring yourself in the meantime about it. And it's like, okay, so you can either play that game, which is quite unsatisfying, or you can just say, isn't there something else here in this presence to focus on? Like, I can't change anything. Until I get feedback, I don't know. In the meantime, I'm just spinning my wheels, trying to get some weird kind of reassurance / beat myself up / encourage myself / worry about things. Personality's used to that, so it feels satisfying, when the truth is, it's actually suffering. Does that make sense, Leanne? Anybody else? She says, okay, that helps. Thank you. Today it seems I'm hearing you more energetically than verbally. Yeah, well, we're doing a lot of work energetically. And she says it makes sense. We are doing a lot of work energetically today. So that makes sense to us. Margie says, personality gets especially involved when I have pain, like what's wrong, what to do about it. Yes, of course it does, because that activates the survival instinct on top of everything else, right? And frankly, pain, you know, we could have used pain instead of time. It's just that time is so pervasive. But yeah, you know, the idea of I have pain, oh God, I have to figure it out. Okay, well, you know, you have pain. There's a reasonable assertion that it needs to be addressed. But addressed by personality or addressed? And that really comes down to the question. Like, have you been present in the pain? Mostly when people get pain, the first thing they want to do is find a way to get out of it. Reasonable, since pain is uncomfortable. But they try to get out of it without ever actually experiencing what's going on. What if it was, okay, like right now, Veronica's back hurts. It's normal for her, happens daily, right? So she's not overly concerned about it. She's been sitting in this chair for a while. That tends to happen. Okay. So the invitation would be to be present with the pain and see what that exploration offers, rather than being present with, I've got to get out of pain, as close to presence, this being as close to presence as you get. I have pain, I need to get out of it. Okay, what if I have pain, I need to explore it? You'll explore pleasure. If you're in pleasure, you don't say, I got to get out of it. You explore it for the most part. But when you all have pain, you try to get out of it. What if you allowed yourself to really see what is there? Tiffany, sinking into uncertainty when other people are asking for my personality response, or at least that's what comes up, practicing being present with that pain. sinking into uncertainty when other people are asking for my personality response. Okay, we think what you're saying is what comes up for me when I practice being present with pain is that I sink into uncertainty or the pressure of personality in that opportunity. Oh, Tiffy, we're trying so hard to understand what you're trying to say, and it's just not working. Let's see. Being present with that pain or the pressure of personality in that opportunity. Sinking into uncertainty when other people are asking for my personality. Okay, so we're going to just focus on the asking for my personality response, because the rest of it we're kind of confused what you're trying to ask us. When people ask for a personality response, and you have to say, I'm not going to give a personality response. Okay, hang on. She now says, the pressure of using personality in certain social situations is what is being challenging at this time. Yes. So part of this is emanation energetic leadership, right? It's saying, everybody around me is giving a personality response, and I'm just going to be in silence because I refuse to give a personality response. You've seen this a lot when you and Veronica go out to listen to music and she's quite quiet when other people are talking. That's what she's doing. Is she saying, okay, basically there's just a whole bunch of personality flying around right now. So I have nothing to add. She says yes. Right? When you and she are talking, you gab, 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 and then three people sit down and she shuts up for 20 minutes. What is she supposed to contribute to personality conversations? She has nothing to contribute to a personality conversation. So she doesn't. And then those people leave and she jab, 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 jabs with you some more, right? And the thing about doing that is you have to stay really neutral, because if you go into judgy, judge, 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 that doesn't help. You stay really neutral. And the energetic you're offering is no fuel. Well, she doesn't get it right every time, but that's a lot of what goes on when you guys are out. That goes on a lot. She says that social awkwardness at work is challenging, but yes, it's really rewarding. Yeah. It's work at work. Ever says, isn't pain a resistance to what is? Well, if you hit your finger with a hammer, it's going to hurt. Right? So that's not a statement that we can say yes to. You know, in that moment, you have pain receptors. And even if you're paying really strict attention to the moment, you probably are still going to have a pain receptor response. But your interpretation of pain is most often a resistance to what is. Yes, your interpretation of it. Personality's interpretation of pain is a resistance to what is. That's a way we would agree with you. She said, okay, I meant interpreting as sensation only. We're not sure that our answer helped you. We'll see what you say next. Sasha, I still have to identify dangers using past experiences. Can include infinite and new possibilities. Keep me in awareness stance. Yes. So we understand what you're saying there. Like, you know, if you're walking down a road and you see some folks and they're holding weapons, you might say, in the past, people holding weapons have represented danger. Therefore, I probably am in a danger experience right now. Right? And so let's say this. There are times when identifying dangers is required in your life, and those times you might need to use the past in the old way to have an instantaneous response to it in a survival instinct-based situation. Okie dokie. What if instead of, but that is like not always, right? So there's huge swaths of time when you're not in danger that you can be practicing the other stuff we're talking about. And then there eventually will be a muscle that helps you process danger situations in a new way as well. But starting with the danger situations is like starting to levitate off the second floor balcony. You don't. Right? So, good point. Good point, Sasha. Okay, Ron says, I'm getting a lot out of this teaching that I feel but can't articulate. I'm in don't know big, started to say big time, hard. Yeah, well, part of that is because we are discontinuing dallying with personality to such a degree that we're not purposely couching our words in ways that are immediately accessible to personality. We're purposely couching our words in ways that reduce personality. So every time we do that and you match energy with us, you have less and less and less, in essence, structure to lean into and more of the vastly changed state to be experiencing. So what you said makes complete sense to us, and it falls into that, all that stuff we talked about earlier about vastly changed state and disorienting uncertainty and all that stuff. Literally for Veronica, it feels like she's falling, right? So yeah, it's weird, but there you go. Oh, Ron says hard to get rid of the word time. Yeah, and the great thing about it is all you do, the best thing you can do, you may never ever be able to get rid of it. You just notice every time you say it. We just said time. Just notice. Notice, and then you can see, like in that moment, we weren't actually speaking about like clock time. We were just indicating frequency. Okay, so we said the word time, we noticed it, we realized that it wasn't something that we needed to revise, because in that moment, it was referring to frequency, not referring to clock. Leanne's getting on a plane. Bye, Leanne. Have a nice flight. Ever says, I'm experiencing pain throughout the day post my shingles in August. I've learned to see it as a sensation now. Neutral. There you go. You learn a new, it's a journey of a new experience, right? You get to see what else there is besides make this go away, besides make this go away, besides make this go away. You get to see what else there is. You get to see what else there is. She says, yes. It's like when Veronica was very ill a few months back, you know, and she was just in excruciating pain. At one point, we know we told you this, she just said, well, what if I just imagine that this is my life from now on, that this will never go away, that I'll be in this much pain forever. Instead of saying this much pain has to go away, what if I said this is just normal now? She learned a lot about herself by doing that. As it turns out, that didn't become normal. But they never did get a diagnosis of what was wrong with her. There never was a diagnosis that actually made sense to her. The only diagnosis that ever made sense to her was the diagnosis that Lynn gave, which was that the duct between her gallbladder and wherever the gallbladder attaches to wasn't functioning properly. Or not the duct, the valve. She was like, that actually feels true. And it fits what I've experienced. And it fits the fact that the doctors can't find anything on all the different ways they scanned me. Because that doesn't show up. Something was just stuck. Isn't that a good way to describe personality? Something just stuck. Something was just stuck. Who else? We're probably about done. It feels full. Do you feel full? Janair said, I had that experience too. Thought the pain would never go away. Started to panic and thought about a way to leave. Yeah. Like, make it go away, even if that means I have to exit the body, right? It gets to that point. Veronica multiple times said, this is when people start contemplating suicide. Like, when it feels like this is when people must start contemplating suicide. Like, how could you not? How could you not contemplate suicide with this level of pain for 6 hours? Like, day after day after day after day after day. How could you not contemplate just getting out of the body? Because it's so horrifically difficult. She never contemplated suicide. She just recognized that right now it's probably reasonable to contemplate suicide. Kate says, yes, full and sitting in silence, not thinking about feeling full. Nice. Nice. You know, we want to just talk with you just for a moment about the calendar, because it's a very interesting month, Veronica was noticing the other day. In that, the next meeting isn't until the 14th, right? So the meetings are kind of more separate than sometimes they fall, which we really like, because this is going to give you an opportunity to have a considerable chunk of experiences pondering what we've talked about today. And we would invite each of you to listen to the meeting again at least once more during the next 10 days so that you can really sink into the different layers of information that we've been presenting, because we have not been operating simply on the verbal level at all. Dennis, at this point, I'm viscerally experiencing a whole lot going on within the heart center, down and into presence. Thoughts and words for even describing what is viscerally or energetically going on in the heart space feels like they were rendered useless 100 miles ago. Feels like being in an intense, ever-deepening birth or bridging process with an unknown culmination that has my whole inner attention and presence. Like being in two very different dimensions of experience at once. Anything you can say about this? Well, we would say that you've described it very powerfully. The bridging word is extremely powerful. And it is very difficult to talk about this, right? It's very difficult to put this into words, into language, because language is the realm of personality, right? Personality has been in charge of what words mean and how to use words. So when you find yourself speechless, when you find yourselves unable to capture in words what you're experiencing, that's actually a milestone. Because what ends up happening is, if you're not just avoiding what you're feeling, right? If you're not just being in denial, we don't want to give anybody a pass to be in denial, but if you're not just being in denial about what you're experiencing, when you find yourself caught in these places, so it happened to Veronica earlier today. It's one of the reasons she was crying, because it was so huge, where she was just like, oh, I can't even speak. Like, I'm just stunned by what has just occurred, right? When that occurs and you find yourself stuck in that space, stuck in a good way, the most important thing to do then is not resist it. Be honest with yourself about that reality. Like, oh, that's true. That's what's real. And you know, we've explained that Veronica experiences it like she's dropping or falling. Dennis is describing it like a bridge. This sense that you are in a vastly changed state. You don't know where you're headed or going. You don't know where it turns out or what it's going to be. You know, personality will say, well, success would be, and gives you an idea of what success would be. So you most often, even if you don't know, like, what job I'm going to get, success would be getting a job, as an example, right? Success would be getting a different test result than I had before. Success would be passing this class that I failed previously, things like that. Personality will tell you what success is. It'll move the goalposts on you left, right, and center, but it typically has some degree of this is what success is. In this new experience that we're embodying and exploring, you don't know where the journey is. What the destination is. And the hint here is there is no destination. There's simply a revised experience along the way. The journey is the destination, kind of a thing. The experience you're having, revising the experience you're having is the destination. because every now is now. So you don't have to go anyplace else. You just revise the experience of the now you're in through not having personality's influence. And there's no destination built in because the destination is eternal presence. It's not somewhere else. It's always here, 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 here. So that, Dennis says, feels like being in an intense, ever-deepening birth. Yeah. That's it. You're in an intense, ever-deepening birth. And that becomes the new normal. That vastly changed state. That I'm no longer a caterpillar thing. You're in that. And as that becomes standard, now you're in the tapestry of the field of infinite possibilities. Now you're in the playground of subatomic particles. Now you're in the all possibilities are possible. Now you're in the every now is now. Now you're in awareness. Now you're in reunification. We've said it all kinds of different ways because when you know that it's an infinite exploration you're on, then it can be described many, many different ways. Ever says, it feels like I'm embedded in the truth of me when I am fully present. That's a neat way to say it. Embedded is a cool word. Okay. We are going to let Veronica go feed her body because as it turns out, her body has decided it's really hungry right now. So we're going to encourage her to toddle off to the kitchen and feed her body. And the rest of you, we encourage you to explore what we have described, listen to the meeting again, and really pay attention to what you're getting out of not being present. Without beating yourself up, just acknowledging it. Oh, this is why I wasn't present. I thought this was valuable. I thought thinking about the past was valuable. Okay. I see it's not that valuable, so I'm not going to do it that way anymore. Right? This isn't an opportunity to beat yourself up. This is an opportunity to recognize what you have been getting out of not being present so that you can see it's empty calories. It's a dry well. You've been sold a bill of goods and you can stop going along with that. You're welcome. 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 It was a joy to be able to share this information with you. And we really strongly encourage you to take it to heart and let it cook around in you. All right. Okay, everyone. Many blessings and much love.